BBC Three Counties Radio.
John Stocker, UKIP, I have in front of me your election material.
Yes.
You say here, we are in a community where minority groups with the more vociferous approach sway the population and the Labour government into making nonsensical decisions and policies totally contrary to the British way of life. Who are these vociferous minority groups in St Albans?
Vociferous. Can I just come back on the immigration first? Because that.
Well, you can go on to that after you've answered my question. Who are these vociferous minority groups?
Well, you have the minority groups that. Well, let's take climate change.
No, let's find out who the vociferous minority groups are.
The Green Party.
They're a political party, not a minority group, are they?
Well, they are the minority political party in St Albans.
Any other suggestions as to who this vociferous minority group are?
Well, as I said, I wanted to talk about the climate change. And
yes, but I'm asking you, you've put in your election material here. We live in a community where minority groups with the more vociferous approach. Who are these minority groups with a vociferous approach?
You have the cyclist fraternity.
Cyclists in St Albans,
yes,
that are a vociferous minority group.
They are indeed, yes.
Anyone else? So far we've got the Green Party and cyclists.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Really trying to screw me, isn't he?
Not really. No. You've put this through everyone's letterbox in St Albans, and you've talked about minority groups who are vociferous. I just wonder who they are. So far, it's the Green Party and cyclists.
Well, we can then talk about the Muslim community in London Coney, who are a vociferous group for the erection of mosques in London Coney. We can talk about the...
In what way are they vociferous?
That they have been... Well, every time you read the newspaper of late, you read about the mosques in London Coney. You read about the strife...
And the problem is?
The problem is that the...
Is there a racial problem in St Albans?
No, there isn't a racial problem.
So why put it on your election material that we have vociferous minority groups? Are you trying to stir it up?
No, I don't. You have vociferous... You have the strife campaign in Radlett. That was a vociferous minority group. It's dealing with a problem in Radlett.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it there, because so far the vociferous minority group you talk about in your election material, cyclists, the Green Party, and Muslims who build mosques. Robert is in Stowe. Morning to you, Robert.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Do you bother seeing the dentist?
No.
No.
I've been to the dentist for 70 years. I worked on my father's farm in Swanbourne near to Den Farm. I was cutting chaff and I swung cutting chaff for horses.
Right.
And I swung the handle round and I got hit in the mouth and it knocked four of my front teeth out.
Oh dear.
And I went to the dentist. And at that time of day, they had to have a doctor to give you gas while they saw to your teeth. But the gas ran out.
The gas ran out?
Yes. And he had to finish me off without the gas.
Right.
And I went home and told my father. I said, oh, my word, that dentist was absolutely terrible. The gas ran out.
How old were you?
I'm 87 now. I think I'd be about 17.
So when the gas ran out, I'd imagine it smarted a bit, did it?
My word, it did. He finished me off just as I was, without any gas.
So when you told your dad that the dentist had done that, what did your dad say?
He said, don't be such a coward, boy. He said, when I had my teeth out, I went to Joe Elms at Great Horwood, the blacksmith, and he pulled them out.
Oh, my word.
And ever since then, the fish and chip man always comes to me on Friday, and he's got some nice little wooden forks to eat your fish with.
Right.
And I always clean my teeth out in between. I think it's the stuff that gets stuck in between.
Oh, God.
And I've got perfectly good teeth. I've never been to the dentist in...
So have you still I mean, when you saw the dentist and he did this job without any gas...
Yeah.
What did he actually do? Did he put false teeth in or what?
No, he didn't. We was very, very lucky. We had a big old farmhouse in Swanbourne and we had some girls from Bletchley Park staying with us. Well, Marjorie Stott, her mother kept the shop at Antelope. She had such bad teeth. But she went home one weekend and come back with a full set of beautiful teeth. And I went to the same place as her, and he put me some false ones in 70 years ago, and so I've still got them.
You've still got that same set of dentures?
Yes.
And you said that the fish and chip shop man comes on a Friday...
Yes.
..with a wooden... What do you do with that wooden fork?
Clean me teeth out in between.
Oh, with the wooden fork?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sometimes I have to get me pocket knives and thin it down a bit, but...
Oh, my God. Robert, thanks for your call.
She collapsed at home, though she was rushed to hospital. The hospital phoned up and said she passed away, and I thought, wow, thank God for that. It was like...
What?
Yes. I know it sounds horrible, doesn't it?
You thought, thank God for that, your wife had died?
Yes.
Why did you feel thank God for that?
It was just a relief. A complete and utter relief.
A relief because you felt that you could then be who you were, or a relief because you'd seen her suffering so much, or a combination of both?
A combination of both in that respect, yes. I mean, she was quite vicious when she was drunk, and she quite often abused my son. And within a few days of her passing away, I started clearing out her clothes. And I'm thinking... Try this on. I'm sorry.
You've got to forgive me, but this just sounds so odd to me and to presumably to a lot of people listening.
It probably does.
Your wife had passed away and you started trying on her clothes.
Yes. I couldn't help it. Initially, I started cross-dressing at home and then I started going out. Pink Punters in Milton Keynes and a couple of other clubs as well.
What was your son's reaction to this? Because he's lost his mum. And now his dad is dressing as a woman?
He's lost his mum, and he felt he's just about to lose his dad. Very, very aggressive towards me.
There are a number of people, though, perfectly normal people, who don't want to watch it, Richard.
Well, fair enough, but, I mean, I think you're missing out on a get-together and just be happy and join in, whether you agree or not, you know, get with the spirit of the thing.
Richard, stay where you are. Let's bring Melvin in Milton Keynes into the conversation. Morning, Melvin.
Hello, Jonathan.
Morning. Are you going to be going round to Richard's place for
I feel like I want to kill myself. I'm so sick of it. They're nothing. Who is she? I mean, what is the point? It's going to be like Night of the Living Dead, all the zombie-like creatures coming out, going, ooh, lovely royal wedding. Oh, my God! It makes me really sick.
Richard?
Yeah, I'm laughing at that.
I don't think Melvin's very keen.
He's not very keen. Well, he's one of the minority, isn't he, you know?
There are thousands like me. But we're allowed to speak our mind about it.
Oh, yeah, oh, please, yeah, it's a free country, you know.
Not a free country, because this has been pushed upon us. We're in dire straits, we've got the country's on its knees, yet if I say what I want to say, I'll be banned, I'll be taken off the air forever.
Well, of course...
It's really, really... You want to get alive. Well, people like you really want to smell the coffee and get real.
Well, of course...
Nothing. They mean nothing to you.
Hang on, Melvin.
People like us and people of royal family scrape off the bottom of the shoes.
Melvin!
And it makes me sick. I'm really, really sick to death of it.
Melvin!
I'm really sick to death of it. You put it on the radio. What do you wear? Royal wedding, royal wedding. I'm bloody fed up.
Melvin. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Is he gone?
He seems to have gone.
Well, of course, the tourism is going to bring in. It's going to bring a terrific amount of business.
I'm so sorry.
I think he's a bit wound up, don't you?
I've never heard anyone so angry on the radio in my entire life.
Oh, dear.
We're in this for the long haul, for the interests of our customers. We don't take this flippantly. We don't take any of our actions
lightly.
Yeah,
fine. But he signed up to a contract. You need to honour that contract, not try and change it midway through the contract.
OK, I totally agree. And what we've done is we've set out in the original letter to our valued customers, Mr. Darby, along with any others, that their statutory rights are not affected, which means that, as it says in the letter, that if they object to this new directive, their rights are not affected. In other words, the contract that he entered into would be upheld.
So in that case, Jim doesn't need to pay any more money. You won't.
Correct.
So why are you writing this letter then? Are you writing this letter in the hope that some people, some customers, will be confused and will think, oh, blimey, well, I've got to just pay more money. Oh, well, that's the way things are, so that you can get some more money into your coffers?
There's no more money into the coffers, as you put it, Jonathan.
How many people have you written to?
We've written to each and every one of our customers.
How many people?
That's over 20,000 customers.
You've written to 20,000 people. And for a lot of people, because, as I said at the beginning, you're talking about disbursements, it's very, very confusing. To a lot of people, this will go straight over their head.
Yeah.
You acknowledge that the customer does not actually have to pay any more money, and yet in the letter, it suggests that they do. You're trying to confuse your customers, 20,000 customers, to get more money into your business.
We don't think so.
One thing that I do find helps, these were some things I read about myself and I tried them. One is, if when you lay down, if you breathe very heavily, you know, you like that.
Poorly, it's like you have a cardiac arrest.
It works. It's absolutely fantastic. It does work. It puts you into a sort of a sense of being so relaxed that all of a sudden you're not doing it and you're fast asleep.
Hang on a minute. So, hang on. Let me just get this right. So you lie in bed going...
Well, not quite. You know, you can sort of like... Just don't have a telephone near you. There's somebody on the other end to give you an awful heavy freezer.
Give me, and none of the numbers are going through, and I don't think these numbers exist, so I'm wondering if you could see, if you could help me, please.
Andrea, listen. Take a deep breath. You've come to the right place. I can understand that you're upset about this, and I can understand that you feel as if you've been duped into all of this. And as far as I'm concerned, Andrea, from what you've told me, it sounds as if you have been duped into it. This company have told you a load of old codswallop in order to secure a deal for a kitchen that you had no intention of ever ordering until they told you that you'd kind of won this special draw and you were going to be using your kitchen as a show kitchen.
That's right.
And now they're trying to, you know, they're trying to put the pressure on you to go ahead and to buy a £7,000 kitchen that not only can you not afford, but you never wanted in the first place.
That's right.
And, you know, I think they should be absolutely ashamed of themselves with everything else you've got going on in your life, Andrea. And you say both of your parents are terminally ill.
Yes, both of my parents are terminally ill. My dad's got prostate cancer just in the middle of my dad having his treatment. My mother has a stroke. And their care is funded by me, so there's no way I can go and have a £7,000 kitchen, which is really not on, especially at this time. I don't have that money.
Andrea, you've done the right thing by coming to us. We're going to take some detail, and we're going to try and sort this out for you, OK?
Thank you very much.
All right.
I don't get near them. Listen, I can tell whether it's a wrinkly or a woman. Do you know these L plates we have, learners and pass tests? We should have a W on the back of the cars.
What, to denote women drivers?
Yeah, to warn us that there's a woman driving the car. I'm sorry, but I really, you know...
You do know it's not 1972, don't you, Steve?
Not really, no. I probably am a bit stuck in the past. There you go.
Well, you are.
Terrible, really.
You know, a bit. But
Since this insurance thing now and they've got to pay more money, you know, when they wanted equality and all that, they burnt the bra. I'm going to have a ceremony tonight. I'm going to burn my pants.
Let me bring...
Seriously, I am. I'm going to hang them up outside. Do you know where the woman's trying to get off her driveway? I'm going to do it over there.
Well, don't burn your pants while you're on the programme. Stay where you are, Steve. Let's bring Liz in St Albans in. Hi, Liz.
My blood pressure's just gone through the roof. How dare he?
I'm actually friends with someone that they hacked the phone, and I've left messages for them that I don't particularly want anybody else hearing, and to know that somebody else has sat there and listened to what I've left on this person's phone is highly embarrassing and really cringy, and I just feel horrible.
Can I ask, I mean, obviously you don't want to say the person that you believe has been hacked, but
I know has.
You know they... How do you know they've been hacked?
I know.
Right. And the messages that you had left on the answer phone of this individual...
Yeah.
What kind? Why are you so embarrassed? Were they personal?
Very.
Right. Have you been in a relationship with this person?
Yes. And I am absolutely horrified that someone else has heard what I've said. And I'm absolutely so worried that for some reason they will come out in the inquiry, and thankfully I'm nobody. They shouldn't come out, but if my mother hears them, I'm never going to be able to show my face again.
Have you had an affair with this person?
Oh, no.
Right.
It was all above board, but...
But if you have left messages on the answer phone of someone you're in a relationship with, and, I mean, what were they? Sexy messages, that kind of thing?
Yep.
Right, well, I mean, to be honest, the world is not going to be that shocked that someone you're in a relationship with, you happen to leave messages that were perhaps a bit saucy. I mean, who cares? You're in a relationship with that person. As long as you weren't having an affair or it wasn't something seedy, then why would anyone care anyway?
Well, either way, how is it any of your business?
But you have taken £38,000 from her. This is all the money. This lady has had to take loans in order to pay you £38,000, and now you're asking her for more.
Is she there with you?
No, I'm phoning on behalf of her.
Okay. I want to speak to her, please.
Why? Why? I want to ask you, why does she need to pay more money?
I have told you it's for the cost of sending her own money to her own account, because, you know...
Do the winnings exist?
What?
Do the winnings, all this money that she's supposed to win, does it exist?
Exactly, my dear. The money exists.
It does exist?
Yeah, exactly. If really you want to assist her, I think it's better.
My name is Jonathan Vernon Smith, and you are on the BBC at the moment.
Yeah?
And I'd just like to ask, leading up to Christmas, why would you ask a lady to borrow all this money for absolutely nothing? Why have you done this to her?
Are you insane? Let me talk to Joyce, please.
Why have you stolen money? Hello? Unfortunately, that was the point when he terminated the conversation, Joyce.
Yes. Yes. Mm.
Joyce, you are not going to see any of that money back. I'm afraid that you've probably not heard the last of this kind of scam, because once you have become associated with one scam, you are very likely to receive paperwork and other organisations trying to get in touch with you, telling you that you have won either other competitions or you have won other money.
Yes.
My advice to you, please, Joyce, is do not pay any more money.